Welcome to a brand new episode of CoreCast. I'm your host, Tim.
And I'm Mikey.
This is Sile. Welcome everybody to a brand new exciting episode of CoreCast. Without further ado, so Tim, last year there was this like report from the US Department of Energy. It was a breakthrough in nuclear fusion, and it seems like it was a really big deal. And I wanted to get into that. Before we get into that, whether discussing it, whether it's hype or reality, or whatever you may call it, I wanted to ask, like, what is fusion to begin with? Like, and why is it so sought after?
I guess in a nutshell, when we talk about it colloquially, fusion is harnessing the power of fusing light elements like hydrogen, helium, maybe lithium, in order to produce clean energy so that we can use it to power our everyday appliances, cars, or other energy needs. That is the holy grail. But whether that's plausible, possible, you know, technically achievable, that's another story. But there's a long history of actually fusion type inventions and discoveries, and it goes all the way back. I think, what is it, 1950s? I think, Mikey, you have
I think it's 1950s. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, people have been looking for more efficient ways to generate energy for a long time, right? Like burning coal, natural gas, nuclear fission. Like, one of the most elegant ways to produce energy is the mechanism that the stars use to produce energy, you know, because hydrogen is the most abundant element in the galaxy, I mean, in the universe. And, you know, stars are basically mostly hydrogen, you know, with lots of neutrons in there. So you get like some modified versions of hydrogen. And it turns out if you have modified hydrogen, there's a process by which you can fuse them together into a state that releases energy. And, you know, in many ways, this is like the cleanest way to produce energy because there are no radioactive byproducts. And so, you know, we look at processes in the stars and we say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could make a star on Earth? And so, yeah, that's basically been the dream for the last 70 years.
We're talking about stars. Can we explain, like, at a high level, like, what do stars actually do that, like, we want to model? Like, what, like, they have hydrogen, and then what do they do with that hydrogen?
They basically take hydrogen and they pack them with neutrons so that they become, like, these modified versions of hydrogen. And they just squeeze this modified hydrogen, like, closer and closer together until they sort of, like, combine. And that combination process releases energy. So we've sort of been trying to replicate that on Earth, basically like mining this kind of like modified hydrogen and trying to squeeze it like a star does, squeeze it so tight that it releases this energy.
Yeah, I guess maybe the significance of this, we have to, like, I think this goes beyond a bit beyond energy, right? Like, stars produce elements. The reason we have on Earth, we have such abundance of life and different types of material is because we have the periodic table, basically. We have different kinds of elements, like things like hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, all the things that are needed for chemistry and for life. And ultimately, all these things are actually, they were created in stars. In the beginning of the universe, we didn't have elements. We just have a bunch of fundamental particles. And at some point, hydrogen atoms were formed. And in order for us, for the universe to create more complex elements, star needed to be there. These are like factories of creating more complex nuclei and ultimately different elements. And of course, more complex elements require more complex combinations. And that's why hydrogen is kind of the simplest thing. So it is most abundant in the universe. And what's interesting is that when you fuse lighter elements together, it actually releases energy. But then you can ask the question, well, how come it seems like it's such a favorable trade. You combine elements, you release energy. How come the universe even have any hydrogen left? And this is sort of the interplay between the forces that we have in nature, right? Nuclear forces, a lot of it is attractive. And when it's attractive, when you combine stuff, energy gets released. But then we have some contrasting forces like electromagnetism, for example. For example, we know that charges that are the same repel each other. So we have interplay between attractive forces and repulsive forces. And that's why through this complicated interplay between forces, we actually don't end up fusing all the energy that's left over. So in some sense, this is like a cosmic reservoir of energy that we can harness in the future. And indeed, the sun harnesses that, and that powers all that is on Earth, right? Without the sun, there is no interesting thing happening. This cosmic reservoir of energy is in hydrogen, helium, and these light elements. And naturally, the sun is using it to power all life on Earth. And we are hoping to harness some of that, basically.
Now, I think it's not a stretch to say that this is the ultimate form of energy production, right? Like, so as basically as we look at fundamental particles, smaller and smaller levels, we discover new forces. Every time we discover a new force, we learn how to harness that force to create energy. When we discover the electromagnetic force, that's what drives all chemical reactions. And, you know, we learn how to use chemistry to create reactions that release energy. But when we discovered the nuclear force, that was like a big game changer. It's like this whole force that we didn't know existed. And this happened in like the 60s and the 70s. So it's like kind of like an untapped resource, as Tim was saying, like a reservoir of energy. And turns out that there's two different ways you can extract energy from a nuclear force. One of them is dirty, called fission, and it releases radioactive chemicals that pisses people off a lot. But really the ultimate way to harness this, the energy of the nuclear force is through this fusion process. And so this was identified very early on in the 50s. And so it's been a holy grail for, you know, this 70 years to try to use this to actually power technology, humanity, things like that.
I see. So that makes sense. It seems cleaner than fission, which is what I assume is currently done in nuclear reactors today.
Yes.
If stars can do it, like, quote unquote, so easily, why can't we do it? Like, what do stars have that we don't?
The problem is star has gravity, and the sun is, what is it, like a million times larger than the Earth? If we have that much material, maybe we could. We could make a fusion reactor, but gravity helps pull all of these hydrogen together so that the sun is super dense and then all this material is trapped. When you kind of squeeze all that stuff together, it kind of wants to fuse, right? Under all this intense pressure and all that. But for us, we kind of need to recreate that kind of intense pressure. And the one thing about gravity is that it acts. Like the more stuff you add to it, the gravity compounds. The amount of gravity scales like the total amount of stuff that's in this gravitational potential, right? So the more stuff you have, the more gravity it has, and it's kind of like a positive feedback, right? But on Earth, we don't have that much material. Like we have a little bit of hydrogen, right? Like there's not much gravity in that hydrogen, so we can't use gravity to help us fuse them together. And the next best thing you can ask, well, what will help us fuse it together will be maybe electromagnetism. But that actually worked against us a little bit, right? Because the nuclei is made of protons and neutrons. And you know protons have a positive charge. So when we try to fuse two new different nuclei together, they don't quite want to fuse together. They want to repel each other. So in order to overcome that repulsion, we need a lot of energy to pump into it so that they get close enough to get that nuclear attraction started so that it can overcome that repulsion to tap into that reservoir. So that's really what the struggle is in nuclear fusion technology. At least one of them. There are actually many, many, many challenges.
I see. What, actually, quick question. What does it mean for like two atoms to fuse together? Like how do we think about that, like at a basic level? It's like, yeah, how do you know something is fused?
Yeah, on that level, we have to remind ourselves that nuclear forces, they're not fundamental forces. The fundamental forces that we know are strong forces, the electromagnetic forces, and the weak forces. These are the fundamental forces, and gravity, of course. Nuclear forces is an emergent phenomenon. It's an emergent phenomenon, the leftover of the strong forces that binds the stuff inside a nucleon together. For example, look at the proton. The proton is actually made of a massive, really complicated ball of quarks and gluons, and those are bound together by the strong force. But then if you look at the attraction between protons and neutrons, neutrons and protons, right? These attractions, the kind of leftover residue of these strong interactions, ultimately what's attracting each other are the quarks inside and the gluons inside these nucleons. And this attraction is emergent. So when we say fusion happens is when we bring, let's say, a proton and a neutron close enough, somehow these quarks and gluons inside them feel this attraction, close enough to feel this residual attraction, and they kind of get stuck together. And for example, in this reaction, a proton and a neutron can combine to form a deuteron, for example. And this is one example of a fusion.
Wait, when you talk about nuclear forces, is it like separate from the strong force, or like what do you mean by emergent? Because I thought there was only like people would consider weak force and strong force both be like nuclear forces.
I would say nuclear forces is actually a mix of all the forces together, right? There's no like one nuclear force. Nuclear force is an emergent phenomenon.
Kind of a mix of other forces, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, you have to understand that if you look inside a nucleon, a proton or neutron, they're made of quarks. Quarks can have strong forces. They can feel strong forces. They also have charges. They can also feel electromagnetic forces. They can also feel the weak forces because up and down quark, you know, they can interact to the weak forces. So really, when you sum up all those together, you look at the interaction between a proton and a neutron, or neutron and neutron, whatever, you have to add them all up, basically. So what we call nuclear forces is the sum of all of that. And you can't just add them up on a calculator. It's really hard, basically. So what we do is just, we kind of just measure them in the lab and be like, hey, look, like it looks like there are these attractive forces and repulsive forces between them. And we just kind of call them nuclear forces. I don't know if this is like a well-defined term in some ways, right? It's just, you know, it's an attractive force.
Like, it's hard to describe it this way. Like, there's like a whole taxonomy about it and people disagree about what's fundamental and what's not. But I think like there's two ways to like make energy in a nuclear reactor. You like, you crash billiard balls so hard together that they crack. And when you break them apart, it releases energy. And fusion is more like squeezing something into a diamond, and some of that squeezing process releases energy. I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's time to like bring up what the elephant in the room, which is like, why is this so hard? Why have people been talking about fusion for 70 years and still very little progress has been made? I think the reason is because, like, you know, you look out at stars, right? And stars interact with the force of gravity and they're massive. So at the core of a star, you get the squeezing process where you just crush things closer and closer together. And this naturally creates a fusion process, right? But when you try to do the same thing in a lab, as Tim mentioned, we can't make something so massive as the sun that it actually squeezes the materials and fuses them together. We have to use magnets to try to push them together. So it's almost like taking a material and trying to squeeze it, but it just comes out of the cracks in your finger, you know, between your fingers, and you try to squeeze it and it just like flies out. And that's actually the same phenomenon that happens, like, you know, everyone's heard of solar flares, right? So when the sun squeezes the material together, once in a while you get ruptures, you get these explosions, and they blast out. But since the sun is so massive, these solar flares, basically, they don't have a big effect. They might blast out a little bit, the material eventually just comes back in, usually. But when we try to replicate that process on Earth, when we try to squeeze this material tight together to try to make it fuse, it just flies out between the cracks in your fingers. And we don't have a way of controlling that yet. And so it's been a very frustrating kind of 70 years, because in principle, it seems easy, right? You just have to squeeze this thing dense enough to make fusion happen. But it just keeps, you don't know how to control it.
Yeah, I think we have to distinguish two things, though. Like, the fusion reaction themselves are almost trivial. You can replicate them in the lab so easily.
We do that all the time. Fusion reactions were made in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Like, making a fusion reaction happen is trivial. It's not hard to do at all.
Yeah. Like the real challenge is making sustained fusion. Yeah. Like in a power generator that continuously fuses and with no loss of energy. Right? Because when you fuse things, like, it's not just that things combine. Once things combine, things break up apart afterward and loses heat, right? One of the byproducts of fusion is neutrons, right? So you can try to fuse some heavy water together, fuse them together, they'll make helium, and usually there's some neutrons that come out. But this neutron carries heat. And in some sense, the way fusion reactors work is we try to harness the heat from the neutrons, right? But as you can imagine, as these neutrons are flying out, You're losing energy in the system. And how do you sustain that? How do you have another fusion happening again so that we keep having neutrons coming out and collecting them and keeping thing hot and generate power like a turbine or whatever, generate energy? Like that's the difficulty, right? Like we're talking about macroscopic amount of energy being generated, and that's not so straightforward.
Well, more than the fact that neutrons are being ejected is the way they're being ejected. So essentially the biggest barrier to fusion energy practically is solar flares. You try to make a star in a bottle, it's going to have a solar flare. And when a solar flare occurs, you don't know how to predict it. You know how to stop. It's like trying to predict the weather. So trying to control a solar flare when you have a star in a bottle, it's like trying to predict the weather. It's very, very, very difficult. People didn't know how difficult it was for a long time. Basically, people didn't know how difficult it was until the 90s. And that's when people were like, oh, crap, this is going to be like a long haul. So I don't know. Can we go back to the root topic of this so-called breakthrough and just say that it's absolutely ridiculous?
For that, I just want to ask one question that we can get to the so-called breakthrough. Why can't you just take a bunch of neutrons and just like squeeze them together? There would be no repulsion between them, right?
Yes, indeed.
You can't start with neutrons because neutrons don't have any latent energy inside them. You have to start with these like hydrogen-ish atoms that have this latent energy inside them. You have to squeeze those together. And so neutrons are neutral, right? It's not hard to squeeze. Well, it is hard to squeeze neutrons together because
No, there's a bigger problem because neutrons only live, 15 minutes?
Squeezing neutrons together wouldn't give you fusion.
Yeah, it wouldn't. Of course it wouldn't. So in order to make a stable nuclei, you need some mixture of protons and neutrons. Mm. Right?
Basically, we have to push hydrogen together. Hydrogen has charge, has charged particles in it.
Yeah, so theoretically, you could, let's say, combine neutron and a proton together, and it will form a deuteron, and it will release energy. But the thing is, where are you going to get all these neutrons? Like, they're not just free floating around. Like, they don't last very long, right? Is it like a day or 15 minutes? I think it's 15 minutes lifetime, right?
Yeah.
So in order for you to make those vats of neutrons, also they're not charged. It's hard to handle, right? Like, you can't just hold them. They'll be absorbing many, they'll be pretty hazardous, really. Like they can get readily absorbed, slow neutrons. They can get readily absorbed into other material, into your hands, into the nuclei in your hands, and start random nuclear reactions in random places. You don't want that. And also we don't have free neutrons just floating around. So yeah, like Mike said, you gotta squeeze existing stable elements together, right? You can't just grab things that are not that stable. So these are some of the requirements, technological requirements that we need to achieve fusion.
And then, Mike, you said one word. I just want to quickly define latent energy. What does that mean? Why don't neutrons have latent energy, but like hydrogen?
No, they might. I mean, they do, but not much. But there's energy. Like when you have a bound particle, like a hydrogen atom or a deuterium atom, there's energy in the fact that they're attracted to each other in a bound state. They basically store energy.
Yeah.
So when you fuse them with something else, that energy is kind of fair game for you to extract. Neutrons do have latent energy also, but it's not sufficient enough to create a reaction that can produce energy when you fuse them together. But it turns out that for heavy hydrogen, like deuterium and tritium, these are basically heavy variants of hydrogen, they have this stored energy in their bonds in such a way that when you combine them, the resulting state releases energy. It's kind of like a magic of, nuclear physics and chemistry that this happens. There's nothing wrong with the neutron, I'm not dissing neutrons, but they just don't have what it takes to create the energy that we need.
Gotcha. All right, then. So without further ado, let's get to this article that claims the breakthrough. Mike, you seem to have the strongest opinion out of all of us on this. So what is your take on this article? Is it a breakthrough? Is it not?
It's definitely not a breakthrough in the sense that, the Secretary of Energy has, a press conference and makes a big announcement that we've like reached this huge milestone, and she's making it sound like we went to the moon or something like that. That actually pissed me off a lot, because fusion is a lot harder than people thought it was, and there's 70 years of history of people like, you know, it's right around the corner, it's gonna be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and then people realize these kind of complications that made it a lot more difficult. And there's just nothing about this particular achievement that brings us closer to the dream of fusion energy. Like, I can say that for, you know, for a complete fact, that there's nothing about this breakthrough that brings us closer to the dream, so to speak.
Well, I would say, to be fair, it's a milestone that you need in order to achieve fusion, but it's still pretty... It's like when you're hiking. It's like you reach...
One of 100 milestones that we need to...
Well, precisely, the news... The news article, if you don't read precisely, it might be a little misleading. They claim that they were able to ignite fusion and get more energy than it puts in to do the ignition. But then...
You ignore 90% of the system.
Exactly. But then if you look a little further in the system, the energy it takes to generate the laser and whatnot, it's like 10 times higher, basically. Right? They only recover 10% of the energy. And also, this was done in a facility that was built...
Wait, I thought the magnitude.
I forgot. Either 10 times or 100 times. I forgot. In any case, it's... maybe it was two orders of magnitude, yeah. So in any case... And this is also in a facility that wasn't really like a fusion reactor. It was a facility that was designed specifically to study ways of igniting fusion. But then this is kind of the first step, right? In order for you to have sustained fusion, you kind of have to ignite it in the first place. So it's like...
Not the first step, though. It's like the 697th step. And they're acting like it's the first step.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we build a lot of infrastructure. We study a lot of different technologies, and it's like somewhere in the middle. It's like we're in the middle of a big marathon. I don't know which mile it is, but it's like
idea what mile it is. That's the thing, and they have no idea what mile it is.
I was just gonna say it's like imagine you're running a marathon. At some point, you went to mile number 3.54, and it's like yay, that's a milestone, because we said so. That's kind of like that.
You know, all of due respect to the scientists that were involved in that. I mean, they haven't released a paper, so we can't really, like, verify what was actually involved with it. But, like, the fact that people are going around saying that this is, like, amazing and fusion energy is, like, going to happen soon. Like, honestly, if fusion energy happened, if we figured out how to make it work, it would be the best thing that ever happened to humanity in the history of humanity, probably, right? Like, if we figured out how to actually create a star in a bottle... Like world hunger, like energy resources, wars, like all that shit would be like, we had to rethink that, right? Because this is, it would be completely transformative in ways that we couldn't even imagine. And the fact that they use this to say that, oh, we're like almost there, when in fact, we're not any closer to that than we were a day before this achievement happened, I think is kind of appalling. I don't know.
Okay, so I just want to understand like the crux of this. So the crux of this is, so what did they say, like, what is the part they put in energy and then they extract more energy out minus the laser? Like, what was that piece that they claimed?
Like, for a while, like, you know, people have been making fusion reactions happen, like this star in a bottle phenomenon. But like, it's always been that you've had to put more energy in to like make it happen, you get a little bit of energy out. Like you have to, like, it takes so much energy to squeeze this stuff together.
Yeah.
That we don't actually get more energy than we put in to try to squeeze it together. You know, in a star, gravity kind of squeezes it for free. So it's like a very efficient. But we have to like spend a lot of money on electricity to power magnets to squeeze the stuff together. And in the end, it's a net loss. These people figured out a clever way to kind of split the problem up, where they shoot a laser in all directions to squeeze the material together. Mm-hmm. And the energy in the laser is less than the amount of energy that came out. And so they said, okay, we created more energy, we'll put it. But what they don't tell you is that it took 100 times more energy to power that laser than what they got out. But it's like very symbolic.
So I want to break that down. What does it mean, energy in the laser versus the energy to power the laser? Like, what?
Oh, I mean, I can't distinguish it. It's arbitrary.
Yeah, because in the announcement, they break it up into the reaction itself and everything but the reaction, right? Like, the energy of the hydrogen that they had coming in and coming out, get released, mm-hmm. somehow remove that part and be like, hey, let's consider that part separately as a, you know, and ignore the rest, whatever, you know, that we need to pay the bills for, right? Like powering the equipment, charging up the laser, blah, blah, blah. Like, ignore all that. If you just take the reaction as it is, yeah, that reaction, we finally generated energy, basically, right? That was done. But if we're ignoring all the stuff that you need to power that laser, to compress it, you know, heat up the medium, blah, 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 right? That's like 100 times more energy, basically.
Okay, so I get that the energy required to power the laser is two orders of magnitude higher. It's a net loss in terms of energy, like a gross net loss in terms of energy. But just I just want to understand the piece that they reported on, that they so-called hyped up on. Is the energy of the hydrogen coming in, is that like the binding energy, and then they use these lasers to squeeze them together, and the energy that got produced as a result of that was greater than like the energy of just the hydrogen by itself? Is that correct?
I'm not sure. It's a little vague. I couldn't find a lot of information, but that seems like what they're going for. Like, the reaction itself releases more energy, but not the entire setup.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what I'm hearing is this is just a very, very hyped up, from what I'm hearing.
It's extremely hyped up, and I feel like I hate to detract, because I'm sure, like, you know, it's an engineering, it is impressive from an engineering standpoint. Like, you create an arrangement of lasers that the energy of the lasers themselves were less than the amount of energy got out. So you can call it a win if you want to, but it's
kind of like an artificial milestone, I think. Mm.
If you sense that we are any closer to the dream of like clean energy because of this, then you are out of your mind.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I mean, clearly the laser took towards the magnitude more to power. So we're almost at time. I guess like one thing I want to ask both of you is like what does fusion, like true fusion, look like? And then what do you imagine would be the possibilities with that for the future of humanity?
I think the answer is we don't know. I think we're still we're still a few real breakthroughs away to achieving it. Like a lot of the new technology, like the tokamak design, we're just trying to scale it up large and just see what happens. We don't really know if it's going to work or not. And honestly, I think we need some technological breakthrough, like real breakthroughs. We do things a little differently to achieve some different results. And then we can have a better idea on what the future looks like. And sadly, this means that fusion probably is still... it's still like at least 50 years away, because we just don't know. It's like we're rolling the die again and again and again, right? Like, it could take 100 years, it could take 200 years, or maybe it could take 20 years if some breakthrough just happens. We don't know. But I don't think we should lose hope. But then again, we also shouldn't unnecessarily bring our hopes up, just be like, oh, shoot, fusion is in 5 years, right? Like, we shouldn't think like that. Science is unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen, I think. And we should keep our eyes out, you know?
I think Tim's absolutely right on that. Like, how should I say this? Like, basically, we will figure out how to make fusion once we learn how to predict the weather. Like, there's this problem of, like, solar flares that occur. And, you know, it's not out of the question. Like, someone could... there's actually a lot of interesting directions going in terms of, like, artificial intelligence and machine learning. Like, can you predict the weather with artificial intelligence? Can you predict solar flares with artificial intelligence? And, you know, I think there's some good work going on there, but it's going to take some kind of a big, you know, insight or some kind of technological breakthrough in order to make this work. And I think what happened in this quote-unquote breakthrough is, like, more incremental. And, yeah, it just annoys me to see that people are touting it's like, you know, some kind of revolutionary thing when it's not revolutionary. The revolution is yet to come. We're not saying it's not going to come. We're hoping for it. And, you know, there's reason to believe it could happen, but this is not the revolution.
Makes sense. I guess like last question to both of you is like, if we did achieve fusion, what would you imagine possibility wise? Like what?
Back to the future, man. You seen Back to the Future? Like Mr. Fusion, yeah. Put the banana peels in the DeLorean, go back in time. Like literally, it'd be a utopia. Like we'd be such a amazing brain.
I feel like I would have a more pessimistic outlook. I feel like the sociology, which, you know, usually scientists don't think very much of, could very well think differently. Maybe
really we would lose our dependency on fossil-based.
But would that really happen? I'm not sure that it will actually happen because there's so much infrastructure, so much money involved. I surely hope that fusion don't end up being in the same category as like these fission reactors, right? Like people got so scared of the technology that they just kind of shy away from a lot of nuclear reactor research or like potential
deployment. It can't fall in that vein because it doesn't have the same dangers as fission.
Of course.
The biggest danger is that it'll be just so, like, if we get it to work, it'll be so incremental. Like, we'll put in like a billion kilowatts of energy and get a 1.1 billion out. Or something like that. Like, if anything, it would feel like a slow start. But if we actually got it working...
Let me just say, I hope the politics will stay out of it. You know, keep the science as it is. So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right, then. Well, on that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.